I've had a Jim Carrey quote stuck in my head for a few weeks now. This quote goes, "You can fail at what you don't want, so you might as well take a chance on what you love." And this quote is about how his own father took what he thought was going to be the safe route in life and got an accountant job, only to be let go and lose everything many years into his career. I think today's guest will show you just how important it is to follow your dreams instead of just doing whatever you think is going to make you successful fast or what society might tell you is the safe path. In life, you're going to succeed at things and fail at others, but I always find that if you have passion for something, it allows you to push through those dark times, those lows, and find that success that's at the end of that journey. I am your host, Jacob Johnson. This is the My Art is Real podcast, a narrative journey into the lives that shape art. Today's episode, Joshua Mizusawa, right after the break. This episode is brought to you by My Art is Real. If you enjoy this show, you can help me continue and improve it by sharing it with anyone you know. If you would like to go a step further, you can collect prints and artworks off of our website, myartisrael.com, or sign up to our Patreon for only $3 a month at patreon.com/myartisrael. Also wanted to take this time to shout out today's guest, Joshua Mizusawa's latest solo exhibition, which is on view now at Secret Gallery in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Thank you for listening, and back to the episode.
Yeah, my name is Joshua Mizusawa. I am 29 years old, just turned 29. I'm a acrylic artist, although I experiment with all sorts of things, and I am born and raised and based out of Albuquerque, New Mexico.
And Albuquerque is exactly where Joshua feels he belongs.
So it's kind of like this mid-sized city in the Southwest. Grew up here on the West Side my whole life. My wife and I actually were like trying to get out of Dodge. So before the pandemic, we moved to Tacoma, Washington for about 2 years during the pandemic and lived in an apartment complex. And so that was the only time I've kind of lived outside of Albuquerque. But yeah, I'm half Hispanic, half Japanese. And so Japanese on my dad's side, Hispanic on my mom's side. So I'm definitely like a combination of sushi rolls and red chili. Albuquerque is probably the deepest root of my identity. So I definitely feel like I belong here.
So where exactly are your parents from?
My mom's family, her lineage, like her, my grandfather was like raised here or a couple hours north of Albuquerque. I forget the town. And then on my dad's side, my grandmother, who's passed, was originally from Yokohama, Japan. And then his dad was from, I forget which island, but some island in Hawaii.
And so how did everyone sort of, you know, make their way to New Mexico?
Yeah, so my dad moved around quite a lot with the military because my grandmother remarried. He was a general in the military. So she left Yokohama originally with her first husband. And they travel around because Tsuneki was part of the military. And so they went to base like any military brat would be. And she kind of moved her family along with it. And then she also remarried. And he was also in the military. So they relocated back to Albuquerque because there's a big military base here. And so that's where they settled.
Then his parents would end up meeting in college. And well, that's how Josh was later born.
And they both went to UNM, University of New Mexico. And that's kind of how they met. And yeah, the rest is history. I had four kids. I'm the youngest of four siblings.
And so growing up with such a mix of different cultures and heritage, what was that like for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think everybody's life is a little different, but it seemed very normal to me. My mom was Hispanic and, you know, in the kitchen, she would, you know, make red chili and pozole for Christmas. And my grandpa was Hispanic. He was also a painter. And they're very much like New Mexican. If you walked into their house, they would have like New Mexican art and pottery and be speaking Spanish. My grandma would make a salsa. But if you go to my dad's side, my grandma was a Japanese woman. And so like her house would be like littered with like all these Japanese trinkets, like kimonos, Japanese art. And it would smell like, I don't know, just like a, like it would just smell Japanese, if that makes sense. And she would watch Japanese TV. So it was kind of like these two different worlds. My Hispanic side was just pretty rich. And then also my Japanese side that was pretty rich. And both sides of my family had like also just like a vibrant history of like of culture. So it was very interesting growing up for sure.
I have always been a very curious person, and I ask people a lot of questions to get to know them. Like growing up, I always would ask my dad how he felt growing up. You know, what things was he interested in? How did he see the world as a kid? Maybe that's why I ended up doing this podcast, so that I can, you know, satisfy those curiosities of asking these questions. One thing I do when I meet someone new is I just ask them about themselves. I ask what their interests are and where they grew up. Nothing too personal, of course, but that's when I realized most people don't do this. Most people are not curious. I've sat down with friends of friends at several get-togethers and tried to have conversations, and at this point, I know so much more about them, and I'm pretty sure they have no clue even what I do for a living, because they just don't ever ask me anything back. I'll ask them, you know, how was your weekend, what'd you do, and they'll answer, and then end of interaction. Growing up, Josh was never asking these questions. He wasn't always curious about his heritage while he was growing up. For him, everything was just normal. This is life. But as he got older and started to talk to his grandma, he soon realized his history was a lot deeper than he had realized. It was pretty interesting.
You know, being a young kid, I didn't really dig too deep into my culture. Just kind of like being a kid and running around. It's not something I'm interested in. But, you know, towards when I got older, a few of the projects I had was to like interview my grandmother and grandparents and ask them like about their lives and stuff. And so I definitely got a healthy dosing of like realizing like how much more rich my history is than what it seemed. Like my grandmother was, she was in Yokohama during the war, and she would just tell me crazy stories. Like she would be making guns at a factory one day out of the week, and the other 6 days she would be going to school to learn English and then regular Japanese studies. And then like as she was older, she would tell me like she used to be part of a rich family, and she was kind of vague, like her dad was Yakuza or something, like he had a helicopter and they would fly around Japan. But during the war, she said like it was hard because she traded these thousands of dollars worth of kimonos for like sacks of potatoes. And she would just tell me this story. So I was like, oh my God, Grandma, you've been through it. Definitely a rich history. And, you know, I wrote a few essays on her interviewing because it was super interesting.
Can be wild sometimes, the things our parents or grandparents tell us about their lives that we never even knew. Things that can really inspire us and find a deeper understanding of them as people. When Josh was growing up, his family would also go to church pretty regular. And that's when he really started to draw for fun. What were you interested in growing up?
I was interested in everything. I don't know. I guess I probably should summarize that. I remember being like a little kid when I was like doing art. And we were part of this religion. I don't want to mention religion, but it would require us to go to... Yeah, don't want to go down that road, but it required us to go to church 2 days out of the week. And so the church was like this two-part segment where they have like a soundproof container in the back for the families. And it was just like the main audience in the middle. And it was very much different from like how churches are. They have like bands now, right? They have like bands playing. They keep people entertained. They got like picnics and stuff. But the church we went to is very much like an old guy reading out of a book. And it was like 2 hours long. So I would bring my notebook with me. And it was that little black and white journal with like the camo pattern. And I would flip it open and I would draw aliens and robots and Rube Goldberg machines. I would like imagine a ball going from the top of the page to the bottom of the page.
While growing up, none of us really view our little sketches as art. But once we start to get older, that view can change. And for Josh, when he got to high school, art seemed to be something he was good at and something he might consider pursuing. Of course, you know, I'm going to ask, but when you got ready to graduate high school, what was the plan?
Dude, that was the question. I think in high school, I did art. You know, I took the regular high school classes, but I remember doodling a portrait in algebra. And this teacher saw me doodling. She was going to get mad at me, but she saw me doodling a nice portrait. And she commissioned me to do an Einstein portrait. And so that was the first time I did art and thought of it as like a future. Like I wanted to do this. And so it led to more commissions and family commissions. And then I remember doing a commission that wasn't family. It was just like an acquaintance of a family member. And I remember doing a dog portrait and they didn't like it. And it was the first time. It was the first time I was like faced with like the harshness of commission, because it was all sunshines and daisies before that. And I kind of fell out with doing commission portraits.
So I guess that sort of ends the art for now. But don't worry, it'll come back. Even if he didn't know what he wanted to do in life, he did know he was going to attend college. So that's what he did.
And so I went to college and I had no idea what I wanted to do. I think I was just kind of doing college to live the American dream and have fun and just experience. So I didn't really do art for a while. But in college, I actually had an idea that I wanted to do a few art classes. So I took art history. And I also took a drawing course. Art history had to be the most boring course I've ever taken in my entire life. It was like a guy flipping through slides, and you had to remember date, medium, and artist. And it was like 1,000 of them. And then I remember taking the drawing course, and they would put a bowl of like bananas and oranges on the table. And we'd be drawing bananas and oranges for like 3 or 4 weeks. So it wasn't at all what I managed. I get you got to do the fundamentals, but I think the people teaching in college were kind of burnt out. And so I made a pivot. I was like, I can always do art in the background, but I need to get something that's responsible and good. And I can really have a future in. So I switched to finance and economics.
Let's go get a degree that's responsible. Yes, we all know that some degrees can definitely lead to more job opportunities than others. But I really think the education system and society as a whole needs to inform people that no matter what you go to school for, you can always struggle to find a job, or even you might find one and absolutely hate it. And even if you hate it, you might lose it at any point. Just because you have that paper saying you took these classes doesn't mean you're going to be locked into some stable, perfect career for the rest of your life. For Josh, on paper, a financial degree seemed very responsible and a great paying job. What's not to love? Well, I'll let Josh tell you how it played out for him. Picking finance and economics, why did you do that?
When I was young, I had this idea, like, I always liked business, right? And I think at the time, there were some movies coming out. I don't know when Wolf of Wall Street came out, but it might have been around. And there was other few movies, like these finance dudes and like making tons of money, like seemed appealing to me. And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna make tons of money in like the stock market. And so finance is very much like learning Excel, economics, accounting, how stocks work and stuff.
Oh man, Wolf of Wall Street. Great movie, but yeah, I totally feel where he's coming from here. You see movies like that and think, oh man, if I could become a stockbroker or something like that, I can live that life of luxury. And for a while, I also thought that's what I wanted. I thought about becoming a stockbroker. But of course, as you get older, you start to realize life is so much more than the money and all these other things. And you have passions and you need that passion to get through the everyday. Just like reality knocked me out of that fantasy, so it did to Josh.
I had this idea that like I was going to make a ton of money and then just like kind of coast and then do art afterwards. That was kind of the plan. But I remember taking this one course on like currencies, and the teacher was like, oh, you guys think you're going to go on Wall Street and make a ton of money and have a suit and have a nice car? Guess what? He's like, in 4 or 5 years, the computer is going to do it all that for you, and there's not going to be a job. So all of us like in the classroom looked at each other like, what the heck are we doing? But if you don't know like a finance and economics degree, now that I know, it doesn't get you on Wall Street. It gets you a sales job after college. So that's what I did. I wanted to make a lot of money in finance, but it just lands me a sales job. That's pretty much it.
And so what job did you end up getting with that degree after graduating?
So my buddy worked at a trucking company. So this trucking company was fleet rentals and fleet leasing. So like, you know, if you ever moved houses across state, you rent a truck, very much like U-Haul. but they were very B2B too. So like if a wholesale food company needs an influx of supply for the summer, they'll rent a few trucks from this place. And so they hired me on as a sales and management trainee. And what that is like you're a guy at the rental counter, and like you they do a bunch of stuff, like you manage inventory, you do sales, you talk to customers, you learn to work with people. So they kind of teach you. It was a really good company. They flew me out all over the place to kind of learn a bunch of things, and they actually invested a lot of money in kind of my education. So, you know, I went to school for finance and economics, but I learned some really good skills about just like talking to people and managing things and like the real economics of like inventory and math. And it was a good job. It was a good job, but it was really like fast paced and stressful. That's for sure.
Well, it was a good paying job. Started to crush his spirit.
I think about 3 years in, you know, there was a certain point where it was exciting and I was moving up in the company. And everything was new. I got a job as what's called an RSR, rental sales rep, and they give you a phone, they give you a car, and they tell you go knock on businesses' doors and make some money. Your job is to get people on lease contracts and get trucks on long-term rental. And so I was doing that probably for about 8 months. But I think after a while, I fell into this weird loop where I would wake up and I would hop in the shower and, there was a point in time where I would like stay in the shower because I didn't want the shower to end because that meant I had to go to work. And it was, for the longest time, it was like wake up, shower, work, come home, drink a beer, go to sleep, wake up, shower, go to work, come home, drink a beer. And then weekend come and you would go drink with friends and be hungover on Sunday and do it all over again. And it was just kind of this weird loop. I think a lot of people can hopefully can relate to, and it kind of feels stuck.
I was so scared of that when I was turning 18. I saw so many people stuck in that loop of, you know, this mundane routine of just working through the week and then having that weekend for them to drink and party. And that was the highlight of everything. And that terrified me, you know? Well, Josh wasn't stuck in this loop for long because as soon as he realized what was happening, he started to make a change.
I was doing that for a long time. And I think there was a few customers. They had me work the counter because it was busy. And there was a few customers just like yelling at me. And I've been in that like loop for a long time. And so I remember going out back and hopped in a truck. And I just kind of sat there. And I had a full-blown panic attack. Just like sobbing. And it was kind of the first time I've ever just like had a panic attack. And I think it was just like a combination of like the environment and then the stress and not knowing how to deal with it. And so I took a half day and went home. This was like the third year of working at the trucking company. And I like slept it off. And the next day I talked to my girlfriend at the time, now my wife. And I was like, I can't do a minute more of it. I can't do it anymore. I was like, I'm going to quit. And so like that morning I signed my, I wrote up a resignation letter and I quit that job.
It's not easy to quit a job for most people. You have to deal with talking to the manager and the actual quitting, which is very awkward. Then there's the part about what are you going to do for a steady paycheck? But some things push us to that breaking point. And if we only have one life to live, we can't spend it being miserable. How did it feel? When, you know, how did it feel when you finally quit? Were you nervous at all about what the future held?
Oh, yeah, man. I think during this podcast, you'll probably hear out I quit a lot. But like the feeling is always the same. Like it almost feels like you're in a hot, like stressful room, people yelling at you. And it's all of a sudden, like it's bright and the air conditioning kicks on. Like it feels so good. And I just like, you know, wake up the next day and I don't have to go to a stressful job. But then again, I was like, I have no idea what I'm going to do.
Josh had absolutely no jobs lined up. Thankfully, he had a few more paychecks coming in and a little bit of savings, but that wasn't going to be enough to last forever.
My wife had a pretty nice car. It was like a Mazda. It wasn't like super nice, but I was like, hey, can I Uber your car? So for probably 25, 30 hours a week, I would be Ubering to pay the bills. And we had like we were like in a small 900 square foot, like triplex. And so our rent wasn't really high, our expenses weren't really high. I just had to Uber a little bit to cover like $600 of rent.
course, Ubering wasn't his dream job, so he had to look around and figure out what exactly he wanted to do next in this life. This is when Josh got convinced by some internet guru to do a pretty risky move.
I didn't know what I was going to do, but I got hit with like some sort of guru on YouTube that said you can make money on Airbnb. So you get a rental property, you sublease it, you put it on Airbnb. And so I maxed out a few credit cards. I got a loan from my parents. They gave me like a couple grand and said, "Pay." It's not really a loan. It's like, hey, go do something interesting. Wink, wink, pay us back. But I furnished an Airbnb and I thought it was going to be like, okay, somebody's renting it out. It's going to be easy cash flow, passive income.
And that right there is this dream that these gurus are selling you. You see all over social media, and it doesn't matter the industry, there are always some get-rich-quick guys telling you how they can make you successful by these simple hacks or, you know, the simple business idea. And in reality, things don't really work out that way, and Josh found that out pretty quickly.
And no, man, you're running a business. It was like very much running a business, dealing with angry customers. There's a few parties that got thrown at my Airbnb. Air conditioning went out, just like, and then you have to deal with the turnover between guests, like cleaning sheets and stuff. So it taught me really hard about like operations with an Airbnb.
At the same time of doing the Airbnb and the Ubering, Josh also started a t-shirt website with a buddy, which didn't go very far either. So imagine this, you're Ubering like full-time hours every week. You're constantly cleaning and managing an Airbnb all alone, while trying to also work on some t-shirts with your friend. I mean, it's a couple of full-time jobs he was juggling for not really full-time pay.
I think the Airbnb wasn't making a ton of money, especially for the amount of time I was putting in it. I think maybe I would bring in like $4,000 in revenue, but then like I would have $3,500 in expenses, but I would be putting like 30 hours into it a week, or at least 20 hours into it a week. So it wasn't making a ton of money, and then Ubering too. So I was making a buy, but it was definitely a learning experience.
During this time, did you feel at all happier than you did working for the trucking company?
I don't, if you compare like my happiness today, I wouldn't say I was happy. I was excited to be challenged again. And so when I was doing that Airbnb, it was all up to me and it was my responsibility and I could make choices for myself and determine how my future was going to go, but it wasn't yet successful. So I definitely remember having some, like, I didn't have nervous breakdowns, but I definitely was like, holy moly, dude, what am I doing? And what am I getting myself into? And I'm like, how does this pan out?
Even though the Airbnb and all of this was hard, Josh didn't just up and quit. He kept pushing until he was forced to quit.
The pandemic was weird. I was like, what is this? And what is happening? Never been through it before, so we didn't know what was going on. All I knew is at the time I shut down the Airbnb, so that was done. The t-shirt wasn't making any business. Nobody was Ubering anywhere. And so that income stream was shut down. And so I filed for unemployment and they were sending me some big checks every month or every week. It was every 2 weeks. It was like $1,200. And I was like, I wasn't even making that when I worked for the trucking company. And so I was like, I was kind of sitting around and doing more art and playing video games and just not knowing what I was going to do. And then I think like 3 or 4 months went by. And we're just kind of coasting off unemployment. And something in me, I was like, I need to do something. I was like, I need to be a productive person of society. So I was like, I'm just being a bum, like playing Call of Duty with my friends, like across the world. And then, so I went and got a job at one of my friend worked at this place and they sold PR software and marketing software. And they're a huge conglomerate, but they were hiring on some sales reps. So, you know, I did a couple of digital interviews and I got hired on as an account manager for a PR and marketing software sales company.
You know, the pandemic, it's a pretty unique thing. It's something that the whole entire world experienced at the exact same time. And it affected us all in very similar ways. So doing this podcast post-pandemic, I tend to always have guests touch on changes that came into their life as a result of the pandemic. And I would imagine it will be this way for many years to come. And Josh was no different. If it's one thing I learned about the pandemic myself and from even Josh during this interview is nothing in life is guaranteed. They tell you to go to school and get a stable job, and then that could just disappear tomorrow. You start your business, but even if you find success, a worldwide pandemic can come and knock you off your feet. So if nothing is ever truly certain, what should you do? I would say chase your dreams, because at least that way you can fail at something you love doing, or hell, even hopefully find success in it. How were you feeling at this point in your life when all these projects just kind of disappeared?
You know, it's hard because you're doing so many different things, and I was Ubering, and that didn't really work out, and the Airbnb didn't work out, and the t-shirt company didn't work out, and then I quit the job. And so I've been doing so many things, and like none of them were successful. Like even doing like the art and the free time, a few paintings here and there, that wasn't successful. So I was just kind of this dude that was like drifting. And I think we probably see some of our friends. I think I was probably like 23, 24 at the time. And you see like social media, and you see some people who like decided to beeline it to be a doctor or stayed with a company, or a few of my roommates even started like multi-million-dollar real estate companies. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard kind of like seeing that amount of success. And here you are, this kid that's moving in with his wife's parents to chip away at some credit card debt that didn't get him anywhere. So it was definitely not a terrific time in life.
During this pandemic, a lot happened for Josh. He was working that remote job, and him and his now wife eloped. They got married and even moved all the way up to Washington State for a new change of scenery. For Josh, this was the only real time living outside of New Mexico. And after staying there for 2 years, they decided to return home, but didn't have a lot of money and needed a place to stay. Luckily for them, his now in-laws let them stay at their house. You know, you've dealt with, you know, these jobs you didn't like, and you've dealt with these like projects that didn't work out in the end. And now you're living at their house. How did it feel for you? Did you feel like you were in a slump of sorts?
It did. It did, man. I think, you know, gradually I probably pulled myself out of it. I think a big part of it, when we moved my wife's parents' house, it was this different environment. They have this house that's like up on the hill, like kind of in nature, and it's really bright. It's a lot of sun in the morning. And so while we were living there and I was working a decision job, I started exercising. So I did that challenge 75 hard, and it kind of gave me a taste, because I had really bad anxiety. I would have like a hard time like talking to groups of people. And I didn't know why, but, you know, like, well, all I've been doing for the past like 2 years is just like drinking, and then like not like eating unhealthy, and then putting myself in these high stress like situations. And so it was the first time where I kind of got to exercise and fall into a routine and work for this job.
We are now entering act three of the show. And I know you must be wondering, where is the art? Don't worry, it's coming. This show is 100% an art podcast, or more specifically, it's a podcast about creatives. I had a very specific intention when making this show. I wanted to make something I would enjoy for me, and I didn't want to make another podcast where I ask artists business advice. I wanted to dive into who these people are and figure out what makes them tick and what led them to being artists in the first place. Josh's journey has been full of ups and downs, stops and starts, and he has learned something from it all and applied it in his life. And I like to think that if me and Josh can come together and put his story out there to the world, that it can inspire some of y'all and help you learn the same lessons he learned. Things are settling down for Josh. He got a remote job. He's getting healthier. He's paying off his credit card debt from the whole Airbnb thing. So what is next?
You're like, all right, when did you do art? And I'm like, I have this like crazy bounce of just like going around from not knowing what I'm doing. But so when I was in Washington, I worked for that corporate company, and, you know, it was very much sales, day in, day out, making calls, meeting your meetings and stuff. And And at one point, they had a few company restructures, and they were owned by an equity company. And so the equity company was very much interested in like cutting expenses, increasing profits, and then reselling. That's kind of what equity companies do to a certain extent. They restructured our commission plan. I went from like making a reasonable amount of money to make a living to like having to work twice as much to like make the same amount. And so a lot of people ended up leaving the company. And so it was just like, I was so fed up with having a few people in suits or people higher up determining the quality of life of like what I was doing, because it'd be like one day you were making a good check and you're making a living. And then the next day it's like, oh, I didn't get any commission this month. And so I have to figure out how to make additional money on the side. And it's like, and I'm still working 45 hours a week. And so, you know, I ended up quitting and I started looking for other sales jobs. I probably applied to like 30 other sales jobs. And I went through a few of multi-round interviews. It's a tedious process. It's like a 5-round interview. I went through like 2 of them where they interview you and then you talk to another person. And then you do like a mock sales pitch, and then you talk to like the board, and then they hire you on. And I went through like 4 out of 5 rounds, and like 2 of those, they were just denied me entry into their sales corporation.
So Josh decided, you know what, this time he's going to bet on himself once again, but he's not going to do some Airbnb thing or some t-shirt business. No, he's going to do something he is passionate about. For Josh, that was art.
And I was just so tired. So I told Carrie, I'm just like, you know what? I've always done art. I've always been creative, probably my entire life. Even when I made paintings, you know, people were interested in them. I'm just going to take a crack at this art thing. And so I did some math and I just estimated how much I could probably make with like commissions, the money in my savings. And I think I could probably coast for six months until I would have to figure out, you know, what to do or get another job. And so for that first year, I think it was in July 2022 is when I actually quit the job. You know, it was just me, a pencil and a paper and an iPhone, just being like, okay, I'm going to do art and we're going to figure it out. You know, I had no idea what I was doing.
He had absolutely no clue what he was doing, but he did know that being an artist wasn't impossible.
There's an artist here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And he's probably one of my favorite local artists. His name's David Santiago. You know, I had this idea that, you know, you're a starving artist. You don't make money to an art. And none of it seemed possible. Like I ended up like researching some of the more successful artists like later on through my career. But I remember David Santiago, and he had these beautiful paintings of women on wood. And it's like, it's got like this like clear lacquer on top of it. And they're like really elegant paintings. And I saw one in downtown Albuquerque, and it's had a price, I think it was like $22,000. And then it had a little sticker on it that said sold. And I was like, artists make money? I was like, you can make a living as an artist. You don't have to like just like make bare minimum just to support your passion. So that was kind of the idea, you know, not to like be rich, but to at least just to like make a living and do what I love, making art.
Josh then, using savings and doing small commissions for friends and family, was able to stay afloat for a while, scraping by. During that time, he put all of his energy and time he could into learning his craft and improving. He was fully committed to making this art thing happen. He was making a website, doing all the social media stuff, and even trying to show his paintings at local art walks.
I had like, so before it went crazy, I had 8 paintings in my studio, and I signed up for the Albuquerque Art Walk. And I made this like makeshift stand, and went to the Albuquerque Art Walk. And I showed my art at the brewery, and everybody was kind of like giving me compliments. And I was super nervous and like shaking because I've never really shown too much of my art in public, in person. And there was this guy like Gabe, and he runs the art walk and a gallery. And he came up to me and he was like, hey, I love your art. I'd love to like have your art in my gallery. It was probably like the first time anyone's ever like, I've ever seen any chance of hope with my art. And so, you know, he said those nice things. I made a few paintings for him to put in his gallery. And, you know, I was like, oh, holy moly, I'm in a gallery now. But at the same time, you know, the money wasn't there. You know, I was just in a gallery, but there wasn't money moving in. I wasn't selling a tremendous amount of prints. And I told him, I was like, I think I'm going to have to get a job at a coffee shop or something like that. And he was like, yeah, man, you probably will, probably for 5 years. That's mostly how artists do it. They work a part-time job or for like 5 to 10 years until they get their career off the ground.
During this time, Josh had also been putting in a ton of effort into making various reels for the Instagram platform in hopes of getting his work out there to the world.
I was focusing on Instagram. So I think we were talking about it. I hopped on camera for the first time and was just like making content, talking to the camera. This is what I do. I have this idea where I'd start learning to edit little videos on a little video editor on my phone and like mash up sounds, and little by little I was kind of learning the algorithm. But I think about a year and a half went by, or maybe a year went by at this point. And I remember doing like a one reel, and I mixed like acrylic paint with gesso, because I saw it in a video one time. And I was like, it's a good idea to make your paint more opaque if you're using cheap paints. And I did a little video about it, and it went like super viral, like 3.5 million views or something like that. And I did another one, it got like 2 million views. And then I had a bunch of paints, and I kind of had this Japanese style going. And for a week, I had the online shop set up. They got ahead that set up, but people started buying my prints, and I started to have like making money off my original artworks, and my account started growing. And it was like, it feels weird, but like I was like working in silence for like a year and just like no hope. And then all of a sudden, like I make one dumb video and all of a sudden all these people started like following. That kind of started this weird growing pain trajectory of trying to turn what I'm doing now into like a business.
And just like that, out of what seemed like nowhere, things started moving. Josh went from barely scraping by to scraping by a little easier. He would then take his past experiences and sales jobs and his other businesses and apply it to his art, allowing him to make it quite a successful full-time career. Like, how were you feeling at that time? You must have been feeling great, right?
It was weird, man. It was a roller coaster. It was like, it's always been a roller coaster. Even now, it's still a roller coaster. But I would say there's frequently more highs than lows. And then there's a lot more challenges, but, you know, I have more resources to tackle those on.
While I know it seems like he had some overnight viral success, it was far from it. If he hadn't have dealt with all these highs and lows before trying other business ventures, Josh probably wouldn't have all the knowledge and be able to handle that viral success in the way that he did.
It was definitely difficult, man. Like, I think I see people like on threads, like you see a lot of artists that commented and they tell like how frustrating it is to do all this and get this much attention. And I was very much in that spot. It's just like, okay, I was doing 40, 50 hours a week, you know, in my sketchbook or on the art painting. And, you know, you would do a reel and just like, you know, a few of your friends and your mom see it. And it was very much like that for like a year. And, you know, I never got too down in the dumps. I always had an idea that like, you know, if this doesn't work out, I can just keep doing this and get like a side job. There are definitely days where you're just like, what am I doing? Is this even possible? Is this dumb? Am I wasting my time? And I don't know what kept me going. I think it was just fun. It was just fun for me, despite not making any money.
And that right there is what's important, right? For Josh, it was fun. No matter how much money he was making, he was going to keep going, even if it meant doing it on the side, because it was a passion. And just imagine for a moment, what would have happened if he just stopped making reels after one or two that didn't get much attention? He wouldn't have gotten to that other side of the tunnel to what his art career could be and what it is today. If you haven't seen Josh's art, I highly recommend you go check it out on his Instagram. You can find the link to that and the username in the description of the episode. His work is just the perfect mixture of his struggles, his ups and downs, his cultures, and his keep going attitude and always, you know, hustling that has gotten him to this point in life. So how do you feel now, man? How do you feel at the point you're at making art for a living?
This is probably the happiest I've ever been in my life. Probably the healthiest I've ever been in my life. Just like the contrast between after I quit my trucking job and just where I was, not knowing what was, to where I am now. You know, I'm so happy, man. Like, my wife loves her job. I love my job. We live in a beautiful house. Thankfully, our families are healthy. And just the other day, we celebrated my birthday. I thought it was kind of funny because, like, all my friends showed up because we had a little birthday party during the day. And, like, every single one of them wore the shirts that we made that say Mizu Sawa on them. So there's just, like, 15 guys wearing Mizu Sawa shirts, like, celebrating my birthday. So it's nice just looking back and just working hard and just seeing how far I've come. And it's definitely been challenging, but it's worth it.
So if we don't know what the future holds, where do we go? I would say do what I try to do and what Josh did and follow your heart, follow your gut and see where it can take you. Of course, don't forget to use your brain along the way, you know. But the point is, I think after 40 episodes of this podcast, the one thing each of these stories has in common is that they never gave up. They kept pushing. While some artists quickly found success, others took a little bit longer, but nonetheless, they all found it at some point. Just takes that continuous effort, that passion, just chasing your dreams. Thank you for listening to yet another episode. As always, I couldn't do this podcast without all of you. So if you enjoyed this show, please share it with anyone you know that might enjoy it. Let's get more people inspired. If you want to support us even further, you can purchase artworks and prints on our website, myartisrael.com. Or sign up to our Patreon page at patreon.com/myartisrael. Thank you, and I will see you in the next episode.